Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, October 17th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show wondering if Connecticut should follow the lead of Massachusetts in a controversial anti-poverty program. East Lyme Republican State Rep. Holly Cheeseman stopped by to discuss her opposition to loosening Connecticut's current retail marijuana advertising laws. And University of New Haven practitioner in residence in public administration and political science, Dr. Patricia Krause, offered her thoughts on the current White House race and polling data.
So you've obviously heard, I think, if you're at all a news person, if you like to, if you make a habit of keeping up to date with what's going on in the world, in the U.S., in the state of Connecticut, in your sleepy little local hamlet or town or city, you may have heard of the phrase guaranteed income. Now, it's phrased in different ways: basic income, guaranteed income, guaranteed basic income, right? We've all heard that. And a lot of you have talked with me about this on the show. And basic income is basically, no pun intended there, what it sounds like: a municipality or some state or some locality decides to give you a basic amount of money that you can try and either live on completely or spend in local or area businesses or use for yourself in, you know, whatever way you you deem fit. And there are some people who say, well, there's no way I would be in favor of this because it just reeks of communism. It reeks of socialism. It's not individual. There's no notion of individualism. And then others say, hey, if it actually provides people with money to do whatever, if they actually, I don't know, maybe return part of that money to the, you know, to the society as a whole, in business, which pays taxes, why not? And I always wondered whether or not Connecticut should be doing that, because, you know, there are cities and towns doing that, a basic income formula. And I saw this story, and I wanted to throw this out to start the show today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Basic income, guaranteed basic income, guaranteed income, whatever you want to term it. It's going on just to our north, assuming our, and you're in Connecticut. You may not be, but you know where Massachusetts is, and the city of Salem, Massachusetts. Yes, the Salem witch trials, we've all heard that. But Salem now, S-A-L-E-M, Salem, Massachusetts, has become the largest city to test out a guaranteed income program that would give thousands of dollars directly to its poorest residents. And this version is by Neil Riley from CBS News, and it's actually put out by one of the CBS broadcast affiliates in Boston. Now, the initiative there, and what I want you to do is think about this as I explain it to you, and say to yourself, hey, you know, with all these new poverty numbers coming in here to Connecticut, and the state said to be now, for many people, you know, kind of unaffordable, what do you think of this? The Uplift Salem Initiative. Now, it's a pilot program that not everybody can get it. So here's what Salem, Massachusetts is trying to do. And let me know if you think this would be something good for our state, your city, your town. Now, it's a decent amount of money. You're not going to be, you know, building a mansion with this. You're not going to be suddenly, you know, taking off to Tahiti for 3 months. In Salem, the Uplift Salem Initiative gives $500 per month for a year. Okay, so that's $6,000 to 100 Salem residents. So you got that? So 100 Salem, Massachusetts residents are going to get $500 a month for a year. Right? So even I can do the math here. $500 times 12 is half of 12,000, which would be 6,000 for the year. Now, there are, to answer your next question here, there are no restrictions on how recipients can spend the money. So 100 Salem residents for an entire year are going to get $500 a month. So 500 times 12. So you're going to get $6,000 a year to 100 Salem residents. So you do the math and do the final calculation, you find out that that's $600,000. In a statement, Salem Mayor Dominic Pangallo, or Pagnallo, I'm not sure how he pronounces it, but all due respect to the mayor, says, quote, "We want Salem to be an affordable place for everyone, and a guaranteed income program offers an innovative approach to achieve that goal." And we'll get more into the details of this whole thing momentarily, but is that something you would like to see? Now, look, the whole state wouldn't be able to do it initially. You'd have to kind of, you know, load this into the system and maybe do a, an experiment here. But what if instead of Salem, Massachusetts, this was a city, a town, a municipality perhaps in the state of Connecticut? I don't know, Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Trumbull, Shelton, Fairfield. Listen. Every city or town has its unfortunate folks who are treading water financially. What about giving $500 a month to a person and say, do with it what you want?
Well, they're only going to, spend it on gambling, drugs, and booze.
Well, they might. Although I don't know how it's exactly done. There's more details here. I'll fill you in on those. I would think there's a way to track this. But what are your thoughts on this? And, you know, the numbers can vary here, but a guaranteed income, a guaranteed basic income, if somebody is struggling and they don't have money to buy food, what about giving them some money? Now, where the money comes from, I don't know how you would do this, but what about giving them some money so at least that store merchant or whatever store merchants can actually experience a little business as well. The state's legal, regulated adult use marijuana business, of course, has been up for a few years now. But there's a controversy brewing from the folks who run that business as to the lengths that the state has gone to what they say and they contend is an overregulation in some spots of advertising and packaging. And there are some folks now at the State House and State Senate who are hearing a push from people to change or loosen those requirements. One of those who is out front on this is a Republican State Representative, Holly Cheesman of East Lyme. She's been on the program with us before. Holly, hi, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, Holly. Great to have you back on. So what's going on here? I saw this story in the Connecticut Mirror the other day. Interesting.
Yes.
I guess the marijuana retailers are getting a little antsy about some of the very specific advertising regulations that were set out in this bill. So explain to my listeners what's going on here.
Well, basically, one of the concerns as we made retail marijuana legal was that it should not attract particularly young people, but others for whom its use might really not be a good idea. So we crafted the rules very strictly. And in fact, other states have stricter rules, particularly with regard to labeling, with regard to the health issues. And I am not one of the ones who would like to see the rules loosened. We are seeing it throughout the country where marijuana sale is legal, an increased number of childhood poisonings from children who get a package that looks attractive, it's gummies, it's cookies or whatever, and are eating it to serious effects, in some cases up to 10% hospitalized and in the ICU.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we have nice, plain packaging, the people who want to buy it know what they're getting. And to be frank, all of the people who got the licenses knew what the rules were when they signed up.
So what is the argument here? They want more, what, Holly? Flashy packaging? They want
flashy
more
packaging. Yeah. They want to be able to use cutesy names. You know, I will not put words in their mouth. They have not had a discussion with me. But my understanding is they compare it to, you know, regulations in other states where, oh, we can, you know, we can come up with catchier names. We can do more colorful packaging. And as I said in the Mirror article, my feeling is the whole point of being a successful retailer is to offer fabulous customer service. And if you do that, it really doesn't matter what your packaging looks like. People will come back because you give them good service. And I would say it applies to whether you're selling cannabis or candy.
And you mentioned here, Holly, and the story does too, that, for example, let's give our listeners an example here. Product packaging in the state must be, quote, uniformly one color. And for edibles and beverages, labels have to be white with black writing. That's according to the Consumer Protection Department. Mm-hmm. And yet, Holly, we hear of kids and these, you know, being in harm's way, mm-hmm. and some of these shifty practitioners, and we hear these warnings about these packages that are on purpose made to look like, you know, Doritos and candy that,
yes.
that these kids would always
see. These are being sold illegally in market. You know, it is against the law to sell or buy cannabis at anything other than a licensed retailer. But you know, the Consumer Protection and the Attorney General are raiding stores, convenience stores, you know, gas stations, quick mm-hmm. shops, which are selling items with illegal levels of THC. They're, made like, you know, crunchy Doritos or Cheese Whiz or something like that. That in itself is illegal. I think that's a, you know, a separate topic yeah. from what the legal retailers want. But as I said, these cannabis retailers, and to be frank, Paul, yeah. most of these are not little mom and pop social equity stores.
No, they're not. No.
These are national chains. These are national chains, and these were the rules of the game. And as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to see them remain the rules of the game.
So do you anticipate, Holly, that once we turn the corner and get into 2025 and forgive me, I forget whether this is the short or the long session, but
no, it's the long session.
Oh boy, I bet you're happy about the 6 months. There we go, right?
Well, this presumes that the voters decide to send me back, Paul.
Yes,
so
yes.
Let's operate under
okay.
that assumption.
Okay, we'll do that. So do you and the other legislators, assuming you'll be back there, do you expect a push from these big marijuana retailers? Are they really going to turn this?
I am sure there really? Will be a push. Yeah. I have no doubt. I will be curious to see what happens. But to be frank, we are going into what is going to be a very challenging budget year. Mm-hmm. We've already seen our surpluses cut in half. We have run out of federal COVID dollars. So to be frank, I think the attention of the legislature yeah. should be on making sure Connecticut stays fiscally sound. And I personally won't be losing any sleep because someone can't market, you know, crunchy Dorito cannabis. You know,
you don't,
and a bright orange wrapper.
You don't sound like, I was just going to, that's good, Holly. You don't sound like you're going to be tossing and turning about this at night. No, you don't.
No, I'm not. Well, you know, we are facing, again, you know, record high electricity mm-hmm. bills,
yeah.
a challenging budget cycle. We have 119,000 youth who are disengaged. We, our jobs, we have 90,000 openings with 60,000 people, you know, mm-hmm. who can't. We have so many problems confronting the state. I would love to see the legislature go in and tackle them. But it's a long session. Individual legislators can offer any bill that they want.
Sure.
We'll typically see up to 7,000 bills in the long session. So, anything is possible, but
yeah.
I think we need to concentrate on really making Connecticut better for everyone.
And Holly, finally, not to mention the grumblings now, and I talk about this all the time on this show, people who, despite the better stability we have financially in this state, they want to get rid of those guardrails. They want to toss them aside and say, no, who needs a stable financial picture, right? What's wrong with
this? Well, you know what? You're told to, if your personal finances, save at least 6 months for a rainy day. Our rainy day fund would cover the state for 2 months, Paul.
Wow.
We don't need to mess with the guardrails. We need, as the governor says, more taxpayers, not more taxes.
Yep.
And that's how we get. And look at our spending. better way to spend our dollars, because we are the steward of the taxpayer dollars, and we bloody well better make sure that we do it right.
And good on you for that. State Rep, Republican Holly Cheeseman, Republican from East Lyme. Holly, thanks. You know the number, so whenever you want to, drop by. We're happy to have you.
All right. Thanks so much, Paul. Have a fabulous day.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Holly Cheeseman there, State Rep, Republican East Lyme. Joining us right now, a return visit from Dr. Trish Krause. She's the a practitioner in residence in public administration and political science at the University of New Haven. Dr. Krause, hey, it's Paul again. Great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So from your view, where do we stand here? Do you buy these polls that are generally all pointing in the same direction, that we're in a statistical dead heat here or not?
Yeah, I guess yes and no. My feeling on polls is they're really only good for a moment in time. And I know that they've been pretty consistent, but, you know, it depends on who they're polling, at what point they're polling. You know, if something's happened in a day and they poll, you may get a different result if you, you know, go the next day and do the same polling. Mm-hmm. So I don't want people to put, you know, everything on the polls. Because I think this race is just, there's too many factors that can impact the outcome of this race to rely simply on the polls.
Why is this race, and let's assume, you know, the polls, you know, within the margin of error, and they're generally, there are no big outliers. So let's assume some point of accuracy. Why is this race so close? Why do you think?
You know, that's a really good question, because based on, I don't mean to be critical of all media, but based on the media, you know, their whole view is that Trump just keeps blowing this, you know, that every time he does an interview, you know, he ruins his chances of being elected. And I read these headlines all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because a lot of people have kind of tuned that out.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have already made up their minds who they're voting for.
Mm-hmm.
So really anything that happens between now and Election Day for the majority of voters isn't going to matter. So I think that they're close because, you know, it's just the way that, again, it's who they're polling and the way that they're polling and how people are feeling in the moment. People lie, honestly.
When you look at the first Trump run where he won in 2016, Dr. Krause, I was reading a book, the book about the Clinton campaign, Shattered. And in that book, it was, you know, these were all, a lot of these people that the authors interviewed were on the campaign. Some went on the record with their names, others didn't. One of Hillary's numbers guys or gals said, hey, you know, people are lying on their Trump support. Like, and I think that the book said that they sent out a memo that said, whatever number you see for Trump, add 3 to 4 points to make that what I think it really is. Now, we all know what happened there. Do you still think that there's a hidden Trump vote there or not?
At this point, I would say no. Like, I don't think anything is hidden anymore. You know, this is our third presidential cycle with him as a candidate. You know, all the talk about, you know, people are embarrassed to be voting for Trump and, you know, people don't want to tell people they're voting for Trump. I think that's BS. You know, at this point, I think people are solidly behind either Trump or they're solidly behind Harris. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think people are. I think people lie on polls a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because I do think some people are afraid to sound like they're giving the wrong answer.
Mm.
But I think in terms of, you know, sort of these closet Trump supporters or even maybe closet Harris supporters that are going to jump out on Election Day, I don't think that's going to happen. I do think some of that might have happened in 2016.
Okay.
Where people were just so tentative about Trump as a candidate that they may not have been, you know, fully out there saying, oh, yes, I'm definitely going to vote for Trump. I don't think anybody now is going to avoid saying, yes, I'm voting for Trump or yes, I'm voting for Harris.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen a lot of that, you know,
and
in
when,
town halls and interviews.
Yeah, and with the vice president, she's in a tough spot, is she not? Because she's trying to bridge a gap between kind of the old Joe Biden Democratic Party, the Joe Biden's, the Joe Lieberman's, Ed Rendell party, and a very active, I would think, doctor, a very active and a very passionate, maybe left side of the party there. So I don't envy her, you know, the task that she's trying to do here, trying to be as independent as she can, even though she's linked to a lot of the, well, she's linked to the Biden years.
Right. And I think, you know, I'm not sure. Well, I'm sure you listened to at least part of her interview on Fox yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think most people did. She was very clear to say, I am not Joe Biden. And I think that this is something that she really has to do, and she has to do it publicly. And that's not to diminish, you know, what the Biden administration has done in the past from her perspective, you know, the things that the good things that, that the Biden administration may or may not have done. I think from her perspective, she just has to make clear that, you know, she is not running on Joe Biden. She's running on Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think she's in a tough position because people, you know, right or wrong, are going to associate her with Biden and the Biden administration. And yes, she's been a part of that administration for 4 years. But, you know, she's, vice presidents don't do a whole lot.
No.
Heck, you know what I'm saying?
I think I could do that gig. Just call me to the Senate if I have to break a tie. All right, I'm going this way. Yeah, that's it. And speaking of that, Dr. Krause, finally, you know, I try to explain to my listeners here, and, you know, we discuss this a lot. You know, no matter who wins, Mr. Trump or Ms. Harris, the VP, you know, and neither side is going to get 60 votes in the Senate to break the filibuster. So, I mean, how much is really going to get done here? I don't think a lot.
I would agree. You know, I know this is probably not what people want to hear, but a worst case scenario is for either Republican president, Republican Senate, Democratic House, or, you know, Democratic president, Republican Senate, Democratic House. You know, like there's no good outcome here if we're under divided government, because it's just either way, you know. Sorry if the language. It's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, no, that's fine. No. I say far worse. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Yeah. So maybe if that's one of your cases, maybe, I don't know, we pass bills to rename post offices or something like that. Or that won't pass the filibuster.
You know, and this is my problem with Congress.
Yeah.
Is that from my perspective, both sides of the aisle have completely forgotten why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if anybody can point to some other than a budget bill, you know, other than a continuing resolution to keep the government open.
Yeah.
If somebody can point to something that they've done that's significant in the last 2 years, I would like to see.
Yeah. Call me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think that that is problematic. And any president coming in, I think first thing they have to do is say, look, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, this is not what we're here for. I don't know if that'll happen, but that should happen.
Well, if it does, you and I will chat again. Trust me, Dr. Patricia Krause. Yes, and we'll pop the champagne. University of New Haven practitioner in residence in political science and public administration. Dr. Krause, thanks, and we'll chat down the road again, I'm sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good night.
Appreciate it.